I bet I've shown you the mugs that we make, the print mugs, which say, because politics matter. So, you know, we are obsessed with politics, domestic, international. But do we have to be so nutty as to talk about Hungarian politics? What is Hungary? It's a country of a little less than 1 crore people in the middle of Europe, which doesn't really count for very much for India's larger interests, trade, strategic interests, geography, geopolitics, resources, none of that. Why are we then dedicating a full Cut the Clutter episode to Hungary then? In fact, most of us Indians will not have any recollection about Hungary. It is such a less known, little known country in India. In fact, barring the generation of people like mine who used to collect stamps, so we remember Hungary for making very nice, very pretty postage stamps, and you can see some of them on my screen. Now, Hungary, as I told you, is a country of a little less than 1 crore people, but area the size of Bihar. So about 93,000 square kilometers. Bihar, I think, is about 94,000 square kilometers. It's in a way in the heart of Europe. It is in what is called the Carpathian Basin. Its politics today has become center stage to European politics, and in many ways now is influencing politics elsewhere and also matters to us. That's the reason we are talking about it. Because its elected dictator, Viktor Orban, has got elected now for a fresh term. He has served 4 terms already in the past. 1 in the 90s and then 3 consecutive terms, and now he's got elected for his 4th consecutive term. Now, if you add it all up, he becomes the 3rd largest serving leader, ruler, that is president or prime minister in Europe. The first, of course, is Alexander Lukashenko, who's been around for 28 years. We've spoken about him. And Belarus falls generally in the same neighborhood, right? The second longest serving then is Vladimir Putin. So Lukashenko, Putin, 2 full-time, full-fledged dictators, and then Viktor Orban, who is quasi-dictator. So he gets elected, but he follows a system he believes in, what he describes as illiberal democracy. It's not that his critics say that the democracy he practices is illiberal democracy. He says that my idea is illiberal democracy because he seeks a vote against liberal values, liberal people, liberal groups, liberal campaigns, and he has a list of enemies, and he has a list of enemies which seems to work in his election campaigns. And his enemies are left in Hungary, left in Europe, left everywhere. He hates them all. Then Jews, particularly George Soros, who's actually a Hungarian, of Hungarian origin. So he thinks that George Soros is out to undermine him and is spending a lot of money. LGBTQ community and activists, he sees them as an existential threat to his country. So the conservative right, conservative nationalist, narrow right, that's his view of life. That's the proposition of his politics. So in terms of his political proposition, he isn't that different from Putin and Lukashenko. He might have a slightly more legitimate election, but very similar in his politics and very similar in his view of the right. And that's why it is in this paradoxical situation where it's a member of EU, which it joined in 2004, which lays great store by democratic values, etc. And I suspect on each one of those parameters, he would fail. And also a member of NATO. Now, NATO is a grouping that Czech Republic, Poland, the home of Warsaw Pact, and Hungary joined in the late 90s, I think in 1999. In fact, it happened when Viktor Orban was prime minister for his first term. After that first term, which ended in 2002, he was in the opposition for 8 years. Since then, since 2010, he's had these 3 full terms, one after the other, and now he's into his 4th term. With Putin and Lukashenko, he forms the trinity of European strongmen who stand away from EU's idea of European values, Western idea, the American idea of where Europe should be going. So this is a strange country. In some ways, stranger than even Turkey, because Turkey is not a member of EU, it's a member of NATO, and Turkey also has an elected authoritarian in power. But one As I just mentioned, it's not a member of EU. It wanted to be a member of EU, although only 3% of Turkey's territory is in Europe, but it could not pass the test of human rights and quality of democracy. On the other hand, Hungary is part of member of both these groups. Other thing is that in EU, while he's a member of EU and NATO, he's completely opposed to their policies on Ukraine. He, for example, is not allowed Hungarian territory to be used for transshipment or transport of weapons to Ukraine. He believes, and he spreads through his official media, the same conspiracy theories that you might hear in Belarus and also in Russia, which is that Zelensky was planted in Ukraine by the CIA, that Putin was somehow manipulated by the CIA and the Americans into attacking Ukraine. He also adds Zelensky among his enemies. The fact that Zelensky is Jewish also doesn't help. So he, to that extent, is the odd man in when it comes to the European groupings, that is EU and NATO. That's why his winning another term now causes everybody a problem. How is he different from Lukashenko and Putin? Lukashenko and Putin, anybody who speaks against them, they just lock them up in jail or they punish them, get them beaten up. Some odd guy disappears also, right, through mysterious poisons and things. In this case, he doesn't do those things. He lets people speak. He lets critics speak. He just makes sure that very few people hear what they say. Why? Because he controls all the media now. By 2017, of all media in Hungary, 90% was owned either by the state, it was acquired by the state, or by oligarchs close to Viktor Orban. Since then, even the odd independent media organization that survived has also fallen. So no dominoes are left now. In 2020, Index, which was a news website and the most independent news website in the country, that was acquired by a businessman close to Orban. The editor was fired. As soon as the editor was fired, of the 90 employees there, 90 journalists there, 80 quit in protest, and that also ceased to exist. So you can keep criticizing him, but you don't have any way of making more people listen to you or watch you or read you. So he's now got complete control of the media. What are the other things he does which would be called un-Europe-like or undemocracy-like? He, for example, has used his brute power of majority since 2014 to carry out what is called as gerrymandering. Now, gerrymandering is a kind of, we don't use the term in India, it's a kind of delimitation exercise when you redefine your constituencies. But when you do gerrymandering, it means you redefine your constituencies in such a way as to load them in favor of your party and against the other party. So what he's done is that he's restructured his constituencies in such a way using his brute power that a majority of his opposition's voters are now confined to some constituencies. So where the opposition wins, it may win by a large number of votes, but it does not win enough seats in the country. Hungary also has a very complex system. It has a 199-member national parliament or assembly, of which 106 are directly elected, as they are elected, say, in India or in Britain or in America. Candidates contest and it's first past the post. But what happens to the remaining 93 constituencies? Remaining 93 constituencies work on proportionate basis. So you are voted and then you are given seats. It's a bit like Israel, but in this case, it's hybrid, which is bit like Germany, although not quite as complicated as Germany. So 93 seats are divided on proportionate basis. Now, if you look at Viktor Orban's election, on proportionate basis, he's got 53% of the vote. That's tremendous. And his combined opposition has got 37% of the vote. His opposition, in fact, this time came together. So there, if anything, the index of opposition unity was higher than before. And yet, he was able to win the proportionate vote. That tells you that he is popular because this is not affected by gerrymandering. Gerrymandering affects the direct fights. In the direct fight seats, that is the 106 seats, first past the post seats, he has won 83% of them. 83%. And here also, if you do a geographical split of his country, the constituencies around the capital Budapest, he's won 98% of them because that is where the most conservative population of Hungary lives. Hungary is a successful country. Hungary is a successful economy, successful society, very talented. In fact, for a country of less than 1 crore people now, and that too, the population has picked up a little bit, because about 10 years back, he started giving cash incentives to women to produce more babies, to increase the population, because most European countries have the problem. Russians have a serious problem about declining population, particularly those European countries that don't like immigration. So in his list of enemies, there are Muslim migrants also. He does not like refugees. He does not like refugees from Ukraine as well. His idea is Hungary for original native Hungarians, or Magyar people, as they are called. So on this small population base, see what have the Hungarians produced, the kind of talent they've produced in art, culture, cinema, literature, etc., etc., science, inventions. Helicopter was invented by a Hungarian in 1928, that is Oskar Asboth. From where did the carburetor in your vehicle come? It came from Janos Csonka, also a Hungarian. It was a Hungarian who invented holography, which Narendra Modi brought to election campaigning in India. It's Hungarians who invented such incredible products like soda water, from soda water to a dynamo. So Hungarians are very bright, successful people. Hungarians have also had a checkered past, and you would have thought normally, given the fact that they've had a very troubled past after the Second World War. They came immediately under Stalin's influence of Stalin's Soviet Union, and their ruler at that point was a Stalin follower. He was Matyas Rakosi, who followed Stalin's methods. In fact, in some ways, even more cruel than Stalin's. In his time, between, say, generally 1948 and 1956, although he didn't serve all of that time, in that period, in that eight-year period, 350,000 Hungarians. Can you imagine on a population base that may have been half a crore at that point? 350,000 Hungarians were either jailed, exiled, or executed. So he was as good at mass killing his own people as Stalin was. But you know, in 1953, the Russians, the Soviets got rid of Stalin. And as the Soviets got rid of Stalin, they started a de-Stalinization program in the Soviet Union. Accordingly, a de-Stalinization also started in Hungary, because they had enormous influence over Hungary. Hungary also became a member of the Warsaw Pact. So they also ensured that Matyas Rakosi was removed as the leader of Hungary, because he was seen as a protege of Stalin. So other leaders came in, and that's where in the course of time, Imre Nagy came in. Now, Imre Nagy, I will not go into the cluttered history of the 50s. He got elected once, then someone else came in, then he came back, and he rose to be this great, respected Hungarian nationalist. But lots of revolts were rising in Hungary at that time, because even though Imre Nagy was a nationalist, the Russians, the Soviets were still there. Soviet forces were still there. There was a revolt. Militias were formed. At some point of time, those militias became so strong, or that insurgency became so strong, that Soviet troops and tanks were forced to withdraw from Budapest into garrisons outside the major cities. It's after that that the Soviets, even in the post-Stalin era, thought that Hungary was doing too far, and they were not going to countenance a Warsaw Pact country becoming pro-Western or joining Western Europe, so on and so forth. So on 4th of November 1956, the Soviets sent their forces in, much like they've sent them in Ukraine this time. 1.5 lakh soldiers, 2,500 tanks. Not very different from what's happened in Ukraine right now. And they went there. That was the Hungarian uprising, which began on 23rd of October 1956. And this is how it ended, with the Soviet invasion. So Imre Nagy since then has been seen as a hero. Now this leader, Viktor Orban, made his popularity, or won back his popularity, at a ceremony where he delivered a big speech, big rousing speech for the reburial of Imre Nagy and other heroes of 1956. So see the contradictions and see how beautifully he's managed it. This was nationalism against the Soviets. Now you have in Vladimir Putin somebody who's wanting to exercise the same Russian power that the Tsarist Empire had, or that the Stalinist Soviet Union had. And in Hungary, a man who's so popular and whose populist policies get such a high percentage of votes is somebody who hails Imre Nagy and other heroes of 1956 as great nationalist heroes and symbols. So he's built this unique politics of his own. And at this point, Europe doesn't know how to deal with him, because I think increasingly they'll find it difficult and difficult, because he now says not only will he not join any sanctions against Russia, he in fact says he'll continue buying oil and gas and also pay for that in ruble. That is something the Russians want, because that way they can keep their ruble from completely collapsing. So he's saying that. So right now he's running completely in contradiction with the rest of Europe, and let us see how that works out. It'll be tough for Europe and NATO and for America to have such an odd man in. Usually you say odd man out, but this is somebody who's in those two bodies but is completely at variance with them, particularly when it comes to human rights, etc., but also on Russia now and the war in Ukraine. That's why this victory becomes so important. Now, having said that, we discover new and interesting things when we look at countries we know very little about. So we had told you earlier that this time all of the opposition parties generally had combined, united against Viktor Orban's party, and yet did quite badly. So there were many reasons for that. Some I told you, for example, control over the media, control over the resources. In 2020, during the pandemic, Hungary is also a country where political parties have state funding. Political parties have to get a certain number of votes, minimum number of votes, so they get state funding. In 2020, Orban said that because of the pandemic, the country needed the money. So he docked all political parties by 50% of their state funds. His party, on the other hand, doesn't have to worry about state funds, because his funds come from all over the place. If you see all the data coming out on his elections right now, of the hoardings that they put up or billboards they put up, he had nearly 20,000 compared to all of his opposition putting up just about 2,000. His main opponent, the challenger against him, just got 5 minutes of time on state media to put forward his plans and his viewpoint. Whereas everybody was constantly tom-tomming Viktor Orban. Almost the entire media, 99% of the media, if not more in Hungary, is what we would call Godi media. That is the exact definition of Godi media. So that was one disadvantage. But the other thing is that in the proportionate system, they were also denied a few more seats, because some of the liberal vote went to a strange party. A strange party, which is a joke party. Joke as in mazak, makhol. Right now you might say, what is a joke party? So remember when we were explaining once the proportionate representation system to you, we told you that in Poland, the National Beer Drinkers Party had got enough votes to have maybe two or three seats, if I remember correctly. So in Hungary, on the other hand, it's not the National Beer Drinkers Party, although that party also stands for the state supplying free beer to everybody. So there's a joke party, and it's called the two-tailed dog party. Like, ek kutte ki do poonch. Usually a dog has one tail which wags like this. So this dog has two tails. See the symbol. It's fun. And see the tie around the dog's neck. So it's a joke party. So two-tailed dog party got 3.22% of the vote nationally. But it also got almost 7 to 8% of the vote in many of the constituencies which had a strong liberal support base. All of that went out of the kitty of the anti-Orban alliance, and in the process denied it about 17 seats. 17 seats would not have given it a majority, but 73 compared to 56 in a house of 199 looks a lot better. Now, this party is something that we need to know a little more about, because it's so much fun. Now, this party, what does it do? It basically paints graffiti all over. It basically makes fun of state practices. Because it got a certain number of votes in the past, it's entitled to state funding. It doesn't spend that money on its campaign or anything. It actually wastes all that money in something called a state fund wasting public program. Right, which is also a kind of satire. So state fund wasting public program with an organization called Rosa Sandor. So remember Jaspal Bhatti, Ulta Pulta? This party is a bit like a Jaspal Bhatti phenomenon. And they also got 3.22% of the overall vote. And the party's slogan is eternal life, free beer, tax deduction. You would think it's a joke, but the party makes no pretension about the fact that it's not a joke party. Now, it does seem that this party also had an ally which became a rival. So this is a two-tailed party. That party was called Fourth Way. Its symbol was not a two-tailed bird, but two birds. And these two joke parties for some time came together and then fell out. And fell out why? That is a fascinating and fun story. The party whose symbol was two birds, they said bird flu should be banned, right? Ban bird flu. Good idea. The other party, which is a libertarian two-tailed dog party, they said that we can't accept the idea of banning bird flu because we stand for all freedom and free rights, including viral rights. And that's how these two joke parties fell apart. So that is the bonus. Having learned about Hungarian politics, at least we got to know about these fun parties. What would we do to get some parties with some sense of humor in our system as well? In fact, I found on internet, there's a listing of non-serious, ridiculous, fun parties all across the world, right? And you find them in almost every country, but you'd find none in India. And that is something that's lacking. And maybe that's why we need another Jaspal Bhatti or some character like that.